whatever is done first thing in the day has a lot of power, because you're fresh and also because there's not much interference. People don't generally make telephone calls at 5 o'clock in the morning unless it's a serious emergency. And the general people wake up a little bit later. So here we wake up very early. I don't know if any of you came to our 4 a.m. meditation, but this is the first session that we regularly do. It's 4 to 4:45. We do 45 minutes, just silent meditation. And at this time of year, it coincides with the morning chorus, so the birds make a very beautiful sound at that time. Sun is rising, and it's the time when the natural world wakes up. And it's also a very spiritual time. In India, as you know, it's a very ancient culture. And long, long ago, the sages had divided time into sections that correspond to about 2 hours. So there's certain times in the day which are good for meditation and spiritual practice, other times that are good for social activities, other times that are good for study, sometimes that are good for work, and sometimes that are good for sins. And so depending on your preference and your orientation, you are more active in those times. But the early morning time is good for meditation and study. So people who do this practice quite seriously, they give 4 to 8 a.m., 4 hours in the day for their spiritual practice. And that's a good percentage of a day. And then we experience that the rest of the day goes well because it has a good foundation. And meditation is done in many different ways. One thing is with meditation, you want to build your stage. We use this expression, build your stage. And your stage is really your ability to sustain a state where you're soul conscious, where you're detached, and where you are very much aware of your inner world. And that practice comes through in the way that you interact with people and situations during the regular day. And in fact, the proof of your spiritual development is how you operate in different situations. Every day there are challenges, and the challenges come to us very specifically so that we can develop ourselves, so that we can become experienced, so that things that may initially seem very difficult become quite quickly very easy. And as we go further, because it's basically a lifelong practice to become the best that we can be. Each one of us has a state which is the best possible state for us individually. And then there are times when we are not in our best state. Like if you become ill, for example, if you get flu, people get flu in winter, and then they have bad mood and too tired and aching, we don't like anything, we want to get better, we want to get back to normal. So in the same way, being spiritually depleted, we want to get back to normal, which is spiritually strong. And the way to do that is to create a routine. And the way to keep it going is to include it, make it part of your daily routine in life. And we find that to introduce something into our daily routine once we're older, you know, you're set in your ways, you can't introduce new things very easily. But if we introduce something at the beginning of the day, it comes most easily. And one thing we also do is at the end of the working day, and when you come back home, you freshen up and you get ready for the social part of the day, the evening time. We also find it very good to give time in the evening for meditation. So that your day is kind of divided into chunks of varying types of activities. And when you do that, it makes your life balanced. Many people find today's life is quite stressful. The demands made on a person are increasing, but your energy level is not increasing. Similarly, we find that in the world today, the governments are telling us that you can expect not to have economic growth as you used to expect. You can expect it to be a little bit still or even a little in the minus side. But your expenses are not going to get less. And the inflation is still going to increase. So what that means is we have to be able to do more with less, and that's a progressive thing. In such a condition, if you become empowered spiritually, you are much more easily able to do more with less. The other thing many people are saying is that time is running faster and faster. And so we also have less time in which to do more with less. And so therefore we have to be efficient. And the best way to be efficient, we find, is to remove waste. So one technique that we use in our daily routine is to observe our thoughts from time to time during the day. And you would have seen here or heard that every so often music will come on for a minute or two, sometimes just a minute, sometimes 3 minutes. And this music is a signal. It's time, you know. It actually comes on once an hour for a minute. Just softly, so that it doesn't interfere, but just a signal. It says, okay, now stop and take a look. What stage am I in? How's my thinking? Create a kind of punctuation in the running of the day so that you have some breathing space, some stopping space, some stilling space, and return to a kind of baseline. And you know this word Om Shanti, yeah? And Om Shanti has 1,000 meanings, but one of them is this is your base. And so to return to your base many times during the day is actually very good, because if you don't stop using energy, using hours and hours and hours, you get very depleted. But if you stop after an hour or so for just a minute or two, you never really get exhausted. So the find this is a very good technique to use in our daily life. And one of the things we also are aware about is that there are troubles in human relationships. Troubles in human relationships are mostly connected with this state of spiritual depletion that is there. And when you're a little bit depleted, and somebody is not polite with you, then you may feel slighted, you may feel attacked, you may feel something. And this feeling drains your energy. You may have to recover from that. You might be able to do it in a second or two, or it might take longer, depending on you. And so what we do is we practice to be positioned in advance with the thought that anytime anything can happen to move me away from my balance. And so therefore we have to be very quick responding to position ourselves in a state that we call self-respect. It's a technique, it's a method. And we say your self-respect is a seat or it's a position that you adopt in regard to the rest of the people, situations, whether it's at home or at work, with people that you're very close to, or with strangers, or with officials, authority. Things happen. You may be in a big hurry, and there's a big car crash, and you can't get through. You want to get through. And what this will do is it will trigger the samskara of impatience. And the samskara of impatience exists because we want to be punctual. So we wish to do something good, but some circumstance prevents it, and then we do something bad instead. And this will drain our energy. So therefore a very good technique that we need to adopt is to practice to let go. Whenever something happens that is anything which is beyond our control, we have to let go. Now, letting go of good things is difficult because you say, no, I have to be on time. But if being on time is prevented and it makes you impatient and you get angry or irritated, then you're going in loss. So one way to look at spiritual practice is in economic terms. Your energy, your spiritual energy, is a kind of wealth. And when you are operating in a positive way, you're accumulating wealth. And otherwise, you're losing your wealth. So, in conventional morality, we are taught that things are good or bad, morally good or morally bad. And our training, our upbringing, whether it's through our parents or our religious orientation, our teachers, we're very much sensitive to doing the right thing and not doing the wrong thing. And whereas in this practice, we look at it a little differently. And there's a special reason for this. You see, when you do something wrong, or when you think you've done something wrong, or when someone tells you you've done something wrong, even if you haven't done something wrong, but somebody tells you what you did is wrong, you may feel guilty. This feeling of guilt drains your energy a lot. And we find that it's actually better to control that and to not permit ourselves to feel guilty. But we find it's better to let go. What that means is, you notice you do an action and it's taken badly, or you decide it was a mistake. The amount of time you spend thinking about that or fretting over that is going to drain a lot of energy, and it's not going to change anything. And so we should not do that. Now, that's going to be difficult because we're used to doing that. And we don't normally think of it as a bad thing, but actually fretting over making mistakes is much worse than the mistake that you made. And so we have to give ourselves a discipline, how the guilt feeling comes, like an emotion comes up, and then it creates lots of thoughts. And during the time that you're feeling guilty or fretting over having done something wrong, then you are not present. You are absent. And what that means is that the circumstances that are going on may be demanding that you are present, that you respond to what's happening. But you can't, because you're busy feeling guilty or fretting over some mistake. So then, when you're not present, you make other mistakes, because what you're supposed to do, you're not doing because you're absent. And so very, very important skill, and something that we must, I think, decide to do at the beginning of every day. Tell yourself, I'm a pure, peaceful, powerful, loveful, blissful soul, and if I make a mistake, I'll let it go, and I won't do it again. It's quite practical. Because you don't make mistakes on purpose, you're very good people. But everybody makes mistakes. But there's a difference, those who let go and those who don't let go. So if you can practice to be the ones who let go, you will find that in your life you are much lighter. When you fret over making mistakes, or when you feel guilty, and you go down and down and down into loss. And then it becomes a lot of work to bring yourself back up. So it's more economical to just let go. You notice, oh, I made a mistake. Okay, doesn't matter. I won't do it anymore. Let go. Because it's not that bad. When you fret over it and you feel guilty, you make it worse and worse and worse. In the same way, another person does something that you think is wrong. A very good example is if your parents, some of you may be parents, right? You have children. And then every so often one of your children goes away and doesn't come back in time. Have you experienced that? Then you fret. You fret a lot. Oh, you must have been murdered. You know? Oh, there must have been a car accident. Oh, there must have been, you know, he's gone into bad company, he's taking drugs. And you have these scenarios in your head which is speculation. And then when they come back 2 days later or 2 hours later, they say, oh, you know, I was doing something simple. And it destroys your relationship with that child. Because that child feels that you're overreacting, which you are. And so what to do? I mean, this example comes up all the time. And one of the reasons is attachment. We talked about attachment yesterday a little bit. And what attachment does is it destroys trust. So if you trust that everything is okay, then you won't fret and you won't worry. And what you also must do is trust your intuition. Because if something's really bad happening, you will feel it. You will feel it because you have intuition. And you're very connected to your child, so you will know immediately, oh, something going on. If you're busy fretting, you will not be able to pick up that signal. Because your mind is in a very gross state when you're fretting. And so what you need to do is have such an easy relationship with your child that you make an agreement that by any chance, if you can't come when you are expected, do this, this, or this signal. And nowadays, people give their child a mobile phone so that they can track them. And the child turns it off. Because we have to have a balance. If we limit someone's freedom, then it breaks our relationship with them. And one of the things that we find in our practice of yoga is it helps us to build trust. We trust that person is fundamentally good and they will do the right thing. Why wouldn't they? Can you do that? But you will see, trusting a person is a very powerful energy. There is a saying in India that whatever is the way that you look at a person, they become like that. So if you look at a person that they're not trustworthy, they will become not trustworthy. If you look at a person that you trust them, they will feel that. And they will also feel to be trustworthy. They will want to be. They will feel like it. And so this practice that we do, okay, we spend time in stillness reminding ourselves, I am pure, I am powerful, I am peaceful, I am loveful, I am blissful. This is my identity. If you don't like it, it's not my problem. But the messages we receive from the environment are, you're probably going to do something wrong. Is it right? And then you'll feel guilty. Even you didn't do anything wrong, but probably you will, so you feel guilty in advance. This is actually not so good for the soul. But it's you know, in a very real way, it's part of the culture, it's in the environment, this idea that people are likely to do wrong. And so spirituality, as we are learning it here in Brahma Kumaris, involves undoing that wrong idea. And so the understanding that God gives to souls is, you are peaceful, you are pure, you are loving, you are powerful, you are blissful. And when you're not feeling those things, it means you're disconnected from yourself. What we are told. And so when we sit in meditation, it's for the purpose of reconnecting with the self and remembering that before anything happened to us, we were pure, peaceful, loveful, blissful. And so we have to roll these ideas around in our mind and evaluate it. Ask our conscience, is this true? Am I pure? And we say, well, not entirely. But in terms of potentially, your natural inclination is actually to be pure, to be peaceful, to be loving. And when you were sharing your experiences yesterday, I could pick up from you that when you're in a natural environment and there's no threats and no kind of moralizers around, that you do revert to a stage where you feel in harmony with nature, you feel peaceful, you feel true, you feel comfortable. It's because it's natural. But the world, as it is at the moment, has an impact on us which moves us away from this natural state. And therefore, we have to remember. So we use this word, remember. We have to remind ourselves. Okay, somebody may be threatening me, but actually, I'm pure, I'm peaceful, I'm loveful, I'm powerful, I'm blissful. So I become detached from the other person's action. It's a technique. And on top of that, it's real. The question that we give ourselves all the time is, am I under my own influence, or am I under the influence of the environment? That's the question. So when we give time to sitting with ourselves, morning time, evening time, or stopping every so often during the day, come back to the self. I am me. I am pure. I am peaceful. I am powerful. I am loveful. I am blissful. I am free. Whatever is on the environment, is all of it is on the outside of your body, and you can position yourself on the inside of your body and look at it almost like you're in a spaceship, you know, looking out through the windows. And sometimes they say your eyes are windows for the soul. So anybody looking into your eyes, they'll see your soul. And when you look out through your eyes, it's the soul looking out. So we have to remind ourselves, I'm a soul, and I am belonging to me. If somebody wants me to do something, or feel something, or behave a certain way, then I will decide, I will or I will not. It's up to me, it's my choice, I am free. Is it right? If someone says, oh, you have to be very afraid, it's my choice. Let me see, do I really want to be afraid? I don't think so. You want me to be afraid? Up to you. Be my guest. It doesn't mean that I have to be afraid. It's not required. I think I'll not be. You can do that. It is in your power. But when you are more externalized, they can take your energy and manipulate you and make you afraid or whatever they want. It's normal. But when you're more internalized, then you have a distance between yourself and whoever's around, which enables you to decide what you're going to feel. Because you are a free, independent human being who has all rights. And you have a right to be what you are originally. So in our teachings, we are told, go frequently to the original state of being. So the idea of being a soul, knowledge of being a soul, implies I came from somewhere to here, and I got in this body, here I am. Looking through the eyes, talking through the mouth, listening through the ears, But I existed before this body. They always say the soul is eternal, right? Soul is eternal, yes? So, how? And where? If you're not here, then where? Because you all know the date of your birth. Everybody knows the date of their birth, right? Because you always have to fill forms and they always want to know what's your date of birth. And so your date of birth refers to the time when your body came out from your mother. But it does not refer to the time when you arrived in your body. That was earlier. Right? When does the soul come in the body? Definitely before you are born. Right? But they don't know how to pinpoint that moment. So it's more practical to pinpoint the moment of coming out of your mother's body. If you can come out of your mother's body, then you can also come out of your own body. Right? And you can also come into it. This is normal. If you're a kangaroo, you can come in and out frequently. That's a special case. But, these analogies help us to understand I am an independent being and this is my vehicle. And so, as an independent being, I have a right to be free, to feel the condition that is my condition, which is freedom, peace, purity, power, love. These are the original qualities of the soul. And we get pulled away from them by being looked onto our sense perceptions. And that is at the level of the mind. It's just the mind. So our mind is under the influence of our sense organs. Because we are externalized or extroverted. Means we operate on the surface of our body and outwards. And so the technique that we're using here is to practice paying attention to make ourselves be on the inside. So you just use your powers of imagination, they work very well. Imagine yourself as being a little person on the inside of your head. Have you seen this film Ratatouille?
Yes.
Right? So there's a little rat inside the hat controlling the guy by moving his hair. And actually the soul is like that. You're inside this, you know, body, and you decide what happens. So it's not that you're a little rat inside, but you're like a person inside. See, because a soul is a person. But the soul doesn't have the form like a head and arms and legs. The soul is having the form of a star. So there's a star inside who's deciding what's going to happen. But when that star forgets itself, then it means whatever's on the outside of you decides what's going to happen. This is called slavery or dependence. And so we become emotionally and mentally influenced by what's going on the outside of our body. Now you'll say, oh, sometimes I have a toothache. Have you had a toothache? That's on the inside. And even, you can say, okay, even activities that are going on the inside of my body, they're still not here. Really, if you have a headache here, it's still, you know, you can separate yourself. Because a soul is not material. A soul is not a thing. And so we have to remember that I'm not a thing. My body is a thing. And I am connected to it by feeling. So feeling is very important. And we feel positive things, and we also feel negative things. And so if there is pleasure, we say, yeah, like that. And if there is pain, then we tend to resist it. We don't want it. So at the most basic level, for survival of this body, pain and pleasure is very helpful for us. Otherwise you'd stick your hand in a fire and it would burn. If there wasn't any pain, you'd be in trouble. So pain helps us to look after our body and also our soul. But when we're body conscious, then it only works partially. When we're soul conscious, it works fully. So when we're body conscious, if somebody wants to make you feel sad or lonely or depressed, they will say, I don't love you anymore, go away. Right? Anybody ever told you that? So when that happens, you feel quite bad. And that's just words that went in your ear and went into your mind, got into your heart, and took over the whole scenery of your inner world. And so the method that we use, because we know that people will say nice things and they will also say nasty things. And the thing is, to what extent do I give permission to them to affect me? Because if I would say to you, oh, I don't love you anymore, you'd say,
sure.
Okay. Okay. But if your spouse, who you're married to, if they say that, then you do care. Because they're supposed to love you. But more than that, it's because you have an expectation and you have a dependency. So this makes you vulnerable. So the method and technique that we use is I love, you love. If you don't love me, I still love. Because I am not sustained by, I am not dependent on your love. But then if you are dependent on someone's love, then you are making yourself vulnerable. And that relationship is in danger because of dependence. If you say, I love you, you don't have to love me. Can you say that? I love you, but you don't have to love me. Not necessary. Can you take that risk? That's a big risk. But it's a good method. Think of all the people that you are emotionally dependent on. There may be one or two. In your mind, think, I love you. If you don't love me, it's okay. Have this person in your mind and just think, okay, I love you. If you don't love me, it's fine. You're still alive. And if you practice it a little more, you find that when you're with yourself, really with yourself, that when you're saying to somebody, I love you, it's got a little message connected with it. That's, I love you on condition that you love me back. People talk about unconditional love. Nice idea, but it's not realistic. And it's also a lie. And it's also not really a very good idea. Because it goes against the nature of spiritual laws. If you say, I love you, and it doesn't matter if you love me, then it becomes unconditional. But so if you put out the energy of love towards somebody, that's a karma. Karma. It's an action. I love you. That means you are making a donation of love.
Now another person says, I don't want you for the second time. You have to stop.
Well, the thing is, what, they don't mind your love. They just don't want the conditions. Because they know, or they feel instinctively, that if you love me, it means you are, you know, putting your hooks into me and you want to control me and you want to drain away all my energy like a vampire. That's what they don't want. Because everybody likes love. But people don't necessarily have the words for what's really going on because it's very subtle and we don't have a very developed vocabulary to discuss invisible matters. So if you are loving somebody freely without putting any conditions or controls on them, why would they not want it? It's like the fragrance of roses in the air in the summertime. Who doesn't like that? Everybody likes that. So I'd rather sit by a sewer, excuse me, I don't think so. Why would you do that? But what people don't want is the attachment. Because attachment is very negative. You catch hold of somebody's energy and you drain it. And you call it love. So they say, I don't want that love. Attachment. Confusion between love and attachment is massive. And so part of what we need to do, and part of our method and technique, is we have to cut down the middle and distinguish what is love, what is not love. And if somebody says, oh, I think I'd like to take you as my hostage. A lot of relationships are like that, hostage taking. They say, oh, I love you, you can't move. Have to go where I say, when I say, and you have to do what I do, and you have to feel what I tell you to feel. Excuse me. That's hostage taking. So if anybody wants to take you as a hostage, what will you do? You'll say, thanks, but no thanks. See you later. Take somebody else. Yeah. Because our freedom is very valuable, very important, it's part of our original nature. I am free. Do not tie me in chains, excuse me. You have iron chains, you have golden chains, but a chain is a chain and it's attachment, bondage, prison, hostage. So love is something else. So when you're sitting with yourself thinking, I'm a pure, peaceful, powerful, loveful, blissful soul, think about what that really means. Think about what that feels like. And allow yourself to feel that. So I'm going to stop now because it's time. And when we get together at 9:30, I would like to talk with you about the source, because we need to fill up. We need love, we need peace, we need purity, power, etc. So many things. Where do you get that from? Such that you don't involve any dependency or any attachments or any kind of prisons, because we like freedom. Mm-hmm.